You know, the interesting thing about having a radio program that's broadcast in our two major cities, Regina and Saskatoon, often the topics relate to both cities. And when we think about road construction in the summer of 2025, both cities have got their stories. We see it on our text line pretty well every day from frustrated drivers. But the good news is great construction weather continues, and I'm guessing that means good news for projects that are still underway in both of our cities. Right now, we're going to get an update on the state of road repairs and rework being done in the city of Saskatoon. We're joined by Matt Jerkowitz. Matt is the City of Saskatoon Director of Construction and Design, as we want to talk about all these projects. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Quite the summer. Is it just me, or was it extra busy this year with road work in Saskatoon?
It's been definitely been a really busy summer for us. Every summer is busy, and it seems like every year, you know, we keep adding additional work, which is great, but our construction seasons don't seem to be extending by too long. So, you know, we're trying to squeeze in quite a bit of work in a short period of time.
What are the big ones that you've still got outstanding?
The Broadway Bridge is probably the largest and most obvious construction project underway, and that began at the end of April and remains on track to be completed in October. And then other than that, there's just a lot of work happening everywhere throughout the city, and one of the bigger projects is the Link construction. So Link is our up-and-coming bus rapid transit system that was approved in 2019, and it's expected to come into service in 2028. So we're building a lot of platforms for this system. So I think 19 have been completed this year for a total of 27 so far, and we have six more ongoing and plan to continue on with those next year. So those are kind of spread throughout the city.
You know, I'll give those crews credit. I drive by one of those sites that was under construction on the south end of Preston, and I was amazed how quickly, you know, they did a fair amount of excavation there to build out that bus platform, and they had it done, I think, 2-3 weeks or so they were done with that project.
Yeah, definitely. They're pretty complex project. There's a lot of work that goes on below the surface to support the future bus rapid transit system, but we're super lucky to partner with great contractors throughout the city, and they do great work for us and complete these as quickly as we possibly can.
Just on that new system, the BRT system, when's that all going to be operational? Do you have a timeline on that?
I think right now the date is expected to come into service in 2028. So the platforms are kind of the first step. On top of those platforms, there will be shelters. There's a procurement package that's currently being finalized for the new shelters that will sit on top of those. So those are the enclosures and all the electronics and routing information and everything that needs to happen as part of that. But there's also several corridors that will require some significant civil works to prepare, such as College Drive.
That's going to be really interesting to see that bus system once it's up in place. You talked about the technology and the electronics. So this isn't just a fancy new bus stop for the run-of-the-mill buses that we're running right now. This is some advanced technology we're using here.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little bit of outside of my expertise, but my understanding is it's going to be all about having increased frequency and much more efficient routes to move more people quicker. I think it's exciting for our growth as a city and as we move into becoming a larger, more modern city.
Is it just my imagination, or did the Broadway District, and I think of that area, Natana and such, they seem to have more than their share of road work? I was struck by the number of times I'd come off 8th Street south on Broadway, that area, and it seemed like the whole neighborhood had detour signs up all over the place. And those neighborhood projects must create a bit of a challenge for you guys, having to work with homeowners and vehicles being parked and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that makes Broadway and that whole Nutana University area beautiful is the fact that it's an older historic neighborhood. And with that, it means that it's an older neighborhood and the infrastructure is a lot older. So, you know, we definitely are focusing on some of the older, more deteriorated infrastructure. So that's why we're seeing a lot of work in that area. And yeah, for sure, when we do a neighborhood-wide project, when we're excavating out a street and closing it for 4 to 6 weeks, it takes a whole lot of coordination, communication, and customer service effort to make all of that happen, because, you know, ultimately we're trying to do the work as quickly as possible with minimal impact to the residents. But it's disruptive, that's for sure.
And I'm guessing in neighborhoods like that, you certainly wouldn't be working 24 hours a day. I don't think the people living there would probably appreciate that.
Yeah, that's right. We do work 24 hours where we can, but obviously in that neighborhood, it's tough to do that.
Okay, so as long as the weather stays on your side, that'll push these projects along. Do you plan, though, on working through the winter months on some of these?
Well, a lot of the work that we do, I mean, it can be done in the winter. It's just not very cost-effective or efficient once you get into freezing temperatures. So, for example, concrete work becomes tougher, more expensive. We can't pave in freezing temperatures. So the vast majority of them we're trying to wrap up before the end of the season. So we've been super lucky here with the weather in the last few weeks. And in reality, I think for more than just construction, we're hoping that we see a great October as well, and that gives us more time to finish up. But whatever we don't get done, we will be kind of moving that to the next year. But there is some work that happens through the winter, but it's not nearly to the level of the summer construction.
Any changes in technology as far as the products that you finish them with? I think about pavement, asphalt, that sort of thing. And I know over the years there have been different products tried. Has anything changed in that area?
Yes and no. I mean, there's the old reliable things that we know and we use as much as we can, but there are always different technologies and materials that come into the market. But we do quite a bit of work to research those and to talk to other municipalities and others that may have been using them. And if it's something that is helpful for us, we'd definitely try it in a pilot project and see if it will be helpful for us.
Excellent. Matt, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate your time today giving us an update on these roadway projects that are at the back end for pretty well most of them here in Saskatoon. You have a good day.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You bet. Matt Jerkowitz, City of Saskatoon Director of Construction and Design. And yeah, the big project, of course, is Broadway Bridge. I got to say, you know, to the people that own businesses on Broadway, holy smokes, over the years, how many times has, business been interrupted, often for, you know, great lengths of time. But for most of them, I'm not saying all of them, but most of them find ways to survive. And I know probably about a month ago, they had the Broadway Street Fair. I was down there and I thought, wow, people still find a way to get where they want to be when it's a favorite part of their city. We got a beautiful day on the way for people outside doing road work or for the farm folks out on the combine. And I'm with you till the bottom of the hour here. Brent Laux, you're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Poor boys and pilgrims with families, and we are going. My traveling companion is 9 years old.
Does anybody go to Graceland anymore? I'm just going to wrap up with this story, a wild story of fraudulent behavior that has landed an American woman in prison for 4 years. She tried to sell Graceland. But it got me thinking, you know, I've been around long enough. I remember when Elvis died. And then I remember certainly through, you know, the 80s and the 90s, there'd be people going to Graceland. People would take their holiday, go down to Memphis and tour Graceland. And it was a big deal for a lot of Elvis fans out there. I don't know if many people do that anymore. Most of Elvis's fans like me are probably getting to the point of not taking a big long road trip anymore or just no longer with us. But anyway. Yeah, if you go to Graceland, and like there were some serious Elvis fans, right? We all knew somebody that had tons of Elvis stuff. But anyway, let me tell you about this story about this woman. You know, you give these people credit if they'd only use their evil ways for good. She tried to defraud Elvis Presley's family and was pretty close to auctioning off Graceland, the home and the property. But at least cooler heads prevailed and people figured out what in the world was going on. The whole story is pretty, you know, bizarre. But really what it's all about is after Lisa Marie Presley died, her daughter then became the person in charge of the estate. Well, all of a sudden out of nowhere come these documents demanding payment of a $3.8 million loan from a private lender that supposedly one of the Presley women had agreed to. This caught everybody off guard, and it said if the family didn't pay this $2.85 million settlement to clear the loan, then they were going to seize the property and put it on the auction block. Luckily, as they say, cooler heads, smarter people looked at this and said, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. These names seem fictitious. So all of these legal documents, all of these fake people were all produced by one woman. And the judge finally stepped in and stopped the sale after Elvis's granddaughter sued this entity that claimed that they owed all this money to. It was just bizarre that she had names and emails and documents, all of them counterfeit, all of them phony. But it had come so close to this criminal almost being able to sell off the property. And of course, at some point, somebody would have figured it out, I guess, but maybe this woman might have ended up with the money. Who knows? Of course, Elvis Presley died in the summer of 1977. This was a foreclosure sale on the 13-acre estate. And these people, again, came really close to pulling this off. But at the end of the day, justice prevailed and the scheme fell apart. This woman, you know, even to the fact where she was charged finally, she claimed, oh, no, it wasn't me. It was these people in Nigeria. They stole my identity and they were doing all this bad stuff. Holy smokes. Anyway, all said and done, Graceland remains the property, the estate of Elvis Presley. And this woman got 4 years in prison this week for trying to pull off a big scam against the king and his family. Some wonderful memories of Elvis Presley, huh? And I think about those people that would travel down to Graceland and pick up souvenirs. And you'd go somewhere and you'd see the Elvis impersonators. Are there even Elvis impersonators anymore? This is important stuff. Okay, I'm going to wrap the show up here in just a few minutes' time. Thanks to our guests. Man, we had quite an interesting range of topics on our program today. We kicked off this morning at 8:30. Daryl Davis, you can tell he's pumped up about all these changes announced yesterday for the CFL. I think most people are coming on board. Some people still have some issues or concerns, but it'll all be wonderful, right? As these changes come into play, half of them next year and the remaining amount in the following season. Andrew Scheer checked in this morning after 9 from Ottawa. They'll be voting today on this conservative motion. They debated it yesterday, asking the Prime Minister to repeal the oil and gas emissions cap. We'll see how that plays out. We had Heather Stewart joining us talking about AI. Good or bad as an item to be used for mental health counseling? Young people, there are concerns about AI giving bad advice, bad information to young people. In fact, there is a family in the United States who is currently suing over the fact that their teenage son committed suicide, and they believe that he was prompted, encouraged by the AI program that he was accessing. Interesting conversation with Heather Stewart, who is with Mental Health Research Canada, their National Advisory Committee. We also talked to Charlie Angus, who's in Regina tonight, speaking at the University of Regina. Nadeem Esmail was here from the Fraser Institute about the increasing cost of our publicly funded healthcare system in this country. John Howard Society has got an interesting program that was laid out for us by Angel Jenneru, and it talks about people who've got a criminal record. And they want to get their life in order, but they're finding it difficult to travel. They're finding it difficult to get a job because so many institutions now require a criminal record check. You show as you've got a criminal record, often that eliminates you from the job search process. So Angel Jenneru from the John Howard Society was talking about a procedure they use to help people when it comes to getting their record cleared, or at least showing that their criminal record doesn't show up when a search is done and people can then get jobs. Lots of interesting talk. Ross Mahoney was here, Callie Armstrong, talking about the event a week from today in Regina as a special tribute to First Nations professional hockey players and such. We had fisherman Winston Stockdale on with us earlier, and we just had the update a short time ago on road work in the city of Saskatoon. Busy, busy morning, and lots of great input on our text line at 1-877-332-TALK, 1-877-332-8255. We'll continue to follow the story through the course of the day today, too, at this ostrich farm in BC that a lot of people are very concerned about. People are upset with how this process is playing out. The culling, it appears, of these 400 or so ostriches. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about on these topics and a whole lot more tomorrow morning. Yeah, one more day for me tomorrow, as we'll have Evan Bray back in the chair here come Thursday morning. Thanks for listening along. Have a great day. Enjoy this beautiful fall weather on our first full day of fall. Brent Lux with you. The Evan Bray Show on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.